Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you are the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now. How do you do, boys and girls? This is Edward October. I am the same Edward October you heard on last week's Our True Crime podcast. I shall return next week. Now that I have my own podcast, do you have the feeling that you're surrounded? You are. There's only one escape, YouTube, where a frightening retro horror show entitled Octoberpod is on view. Octoberpod was directed by Edward October. It was produced and edited by Edward October. Oh yes, Mr. October lends his vocal talents to Octoberpod. Why not join the happy hordes of bold individualists and stream Octoberpod? Available now on YouTube, Spotify, Google Play, and at OctoberPodVHS.com. Octoberpod. Retro horror for bold individualists.
Hey, you're listening to Tiffany and Sarah at Nefarious Podcast. Each week we bring you stories encompassed into different themes.
Our stories range from the chillingly comical to the downright disturbing. We dive into all things nefarious.
Join us as we put a lighthearted spin on otherwise serious topics and get to know us along the way. You'll love us.
We hope. Find our podcast on all major platforms as we drop new episodes every Wednesday.
Hey, Jen.
Hey, Cam, we're back.
We are back. Cuckoo's back.
Yay. Cuckoo's back. Hi, everybody. We missed you.
No.
Yeah. We did. I missed you.
No, it just means school's going to start and then you go back to school. Anyway, what you got going on? What's on? What up? What a good.
We have moved from Podbean to Spreaker now. Woo-hoo! We changed hosts, which is allowing ads. So you're going to hear ads. We apologize if you don't like ads. But
it has to be done.
It has to be done. We don't like ads either.
We figured out the money that we owed Jen's husband.
Who's the producer, unwillingly.
He's the money man, let's be honest.
Sugar daddy.
And as it stands right now, it would take us 4 years if we never spent another dime to pay him back what we owe.
Yep. So we had to do ads. My apologies, but sorry, not sorry, I guess. We got to get under, got to get out under his thumb.
Pretty soon he's going to be demanding.
He's
like,
keeping things. Us down. He's
holding us down, man.
Keeping us down. But anyway, so we'll be having ads and hopefully.
It's fine.
It's all good.
It's all good. What else you got over there?
Oh,
I got a little list.
I do have a little list. I want to give a few shout outs on this episode to some people who left some great reviews.
Yeah.
Yay, we have Naptime Nancy Drew.
Naptime Nancy Drew.
We love Nancy Drew.
Podcast. Check it out. Boy, to be a mom of little ones and have a podcast, I don't.
And she writes.
I don't know how
she writes. She's amazing. E.T. McLean.
Mm-hmm.
She's another one. 226BH. Didn't leave us a good review. Said, one of you reads off the script. The other one acts surprised. Well, guess what? One of us does read off the script and the other one must be a bad actress because we really do not know what the other one is going to say to us. So,
and we've said that multiple times. So
multiple times.
I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. Sorry. The only time that we would repeat it is if somebody flubbed up the talk, but you probably heard it in the bloopers.
A lot of that we leave in anyway.
So whatever. Yep. Whoever is not hosting the show is always surprised. And then we have a couple Patreons.
Woo-woo!
New Patreon Woo-woo! People. Robin Bookseller, thank you very much.
Thanks, Robin.
Carol, thank you very much. And Alicia B., thank you very much.
Woo-woo! Woo-woo! Hello!
We love you all. Thank you very much.
We do. All right.
All right. You've got a big one for us, right?
This is a doozy, Jen. I tell you what. I started working on this a long time ago. but kind of got in gear because the Sundance channel is doing a documentary.
They've already put it out, right?
Bella. I saw the first episode. I like the way they're doing it. It's different. So I just want to first and foremost say that all of this is based on a book called In Broad Daylight by Harry McLean, M-A-C-L-E-A-N. So if there's any quotes in there, that's where it came from. I did not go interview these people. I am not plagiarizing. He is the number one guy that did this book.
I remember selling the book.
1988, I believe it was released. Mm-hmm. And so it was, you know.
So anyway, this is not going to be a one-parter, nor is it going to be a two-parter. It's going to be a two-weeker two-parter, right?
Two-weeker two-parter.
Two-weeker two-parter.
That's what we're looking at so far.
Yeah. All right, you ready?
Ready.
Let's do it, sister.
To look at the small town, you would see what many Americans would see. Kids playing in the front yards, men in their older pickups, waving at everyone that pass, and folks chatting with each other as they gather in town. With a population of only 440 people in 1981, everyone in this Missouri town knew each other. Just like many small towns, the people knew each other well and had grown up together. They protected each other, and most importantly, they knew when to keep a secret.
Mm-hmm.
The town people knew who the good people were, they knew who was a bit of trouble, and they also knew that the devil was alive and well and living right there with them in Skidmore, Missouri. Skidmore is a small farming community located in Nottoway County, which is in northwest Missouri. It's not far from Maryville and St. Joseph, Missouri, and a bit over 100 miles from Kansas City. The population since this infamous crime happened has dwindled to around 263 people, and that was 2017. It is exactly what you think of when you think of small town America, with two paved streets, no stoplights. Its heyday has come and gone after the turn of the century. High school kids go to Maryville to hang out and socialize, as it's a bigger place. All the streets are named for trees. There's a grocery store and, of course, a tavern named the D&G after its owners, Dell and Greg Clement. Little backstory for you. On June 6th, 1910, when she was just 14 years old, Mabel Lister married 20-year-old Tony Wyatt McElroy from nearby Sheldon. Tony was known for his hot temper and terrible cursing. As a young man, he made moonshine, drank too much, got into fights, usually over women. Tony farmed a little, but mainly he made his living with wagons and horses. Mabel gave birth to a boy on February 26th, 1911, only 2 days later before she turned 15. Can you imagine?
Unreal.
It's my daughter's age.
Mm.
Plus, I'll be a grandma. That's not, that can't happen. Herschel was the first of 16 children. That's right, 16.
Well, she started at 15, so what do you expect?
She lost a set of twins along the way. Seven boys and seven girls were spaced out almost evenly over a 28-year span of childbearing. Ken Rex McElroy was born on June 16, 1934, followed by the last child, Tim, born on June 1, 1936. The family was poor then, as it would be poor up to the last few years, but the children were always clean and presentable. Times were tough in eastern Kansas in the pre-Depression 20s, and somewhere around 1926 or 1927, Tony and Mabel packed up the family and set out for southern Missouri, ending up in the Ozarks. In the town of Lamar, they rented a 400-acre farm and planted corn, and by early July, the crops were doing well. But two rainless weeks of burning sun and hot winds destroyed the entire crop, and the McElroys went under.
Mm.
Isn't that shocking with the farms and stuff like that? Just 2 weeks and that just wipes you out. Everything you do. Those farmers work so hard. Ken McElroy spent the first 13 years of his life as a child of a tenant farmer, living in someone else's house, working somebody else's land, continuously struggling for economic survival. The bitterness of these years never left him. Ken was never Tony's favorite child. Years later, Tony would list for a Skidmore banker which of his kids were okay and which ones to stay away from. He always put Ken in the latter group. Timmy, born 2 years after Ken, made things even worse. Timmy had a sweet disposition from the beginning, and he fit right in the role of the baby of the family. School was not Ken's strong suit.
That never is.
Often he would show up to school smelling like whatever he had wrestled with that morning. Could be a raccoon, a skunk, whatever. His fifth grade teacher would take him to the basement and attempt to get rid of the odor by washing his hands and face using cleaning fluids on his clothes.
Oh, that's awful.
Sometimes the smell was so bad she just had to send him home. Ken seldom went to school that year, and when he did show up, he never had done his homework, and he displayed little interest in what was going on. Ken kept to himself, never mixing with the other kids, and seldom participated in any school activities. He'd rather be out running with his dogs and getting dirty.
Or the raccoons.
Much like a lot of little boys.
Well, some back then, a lot of people didn't believe in no book learning. There's some people now that don't think you need book learning.
You don't need no book learning.
You don't need no book learning.
You can teach someone, yeah. Okay.
And back then, you didn't need an education.
By the time Ken made it to the sixth grade, he was the biggest kid in his class. He was 3-4 inches over even the other tall boys. The kids in school learned early to stay away from Ken. Ken was also known to steal a little bit. One winter day, the owner of the local gas station and grocery store in Graham caught him and another boy stealing some items. The man called Tony, which was his dad, and told him about it. Later in the day, Tony burst into the store with the long, curved hunting knife in his hand, slammed the owner up against the wall, and held the knife to his throat. "If you ever touch my boy again, I'll cut your heart out."
Hmm.
And so now we're going to learn where...
So the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Exactly. Is that what you're saying?
At the end of eighth grade, Ken stopped going to school altogether. He was told, if you quit school, well, you're going to need to work. But Ken didn't want to do that either. So there
was
only one thing that he could do to get by. And it's not legal. In 1952, when he was 18, Ken McElroy married Olita, a 16-year-old girl from St. Joe. Soon after, they moved to Denver, where Ken got a construction job. Yay, Ken, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's doing okay. Olita got pregnant and had a stillborn child.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not good.
That's tough.
One day, as Ken was working on the construction crew, a cribbing form fell about 30 feet up and hit him on the head, splitting his safety helmet and cutting his scalp.
What's a cribbing?
I don't know.
Construction.
Well, it's just construction stuff. I'm guessing it's cribbing, like to hold something, to crib, you know, to hold. You look that up.
Boxer cribbing is a temporary wooden structure used to support heavy objects during construction. I read real good.
The accident ended up jamming the nerves and muscles in his neck, causing him periodic episodes of severe pain and occasional blackout spells for the rest of his life. McElroy told people that this injury resulted in a steel plate being implanted in his head, and many people attributed much of his bizarre and violent behavior to the plate. However, when he had an autopsy performed on him, there was no plate. This was Ken's last attempt to function in the regular world. Around 1955 or 1956, he and Olita moved back to Missouri, where all the stealing he had learned how to perfect with his friends in junior high would be making a comeback, and he would now start earning money that way, because, frankly, that's a lot easier than construction.
Only if you don't get caught.
He started off rustling cattle and pigs. That's what I meant, that I didn't know that people still rustled cattle and pigs.
Oh, stealing other people's horses.
Yeah. He started off rustling cattle and pigs, but this wasn't bringing in as much money as he had hoped. He wanted bigger and better plans, and badder plans, too.
Badder?
Badder. It was at this time rumors started to fly about how evil McElroy was. There were whispers of him raping a 14-year-old girl who ended up pregnant with twins, only to die in childbirth because she couldn't afford health care. And if that wasn't bad enough, McElroy returned a year later to what? Rape her sister. The mention of McElroy's name is starting to send shivers down the spines of all the community. It's also at this time that his fetish, shall we say, for young girls appears. And by young, I mean 13 years old. Also at this time, his inability to never let anything go shows up. Sound familiar? If he was in a bar and he heard someone talk bad about him or his family, he would calmly walk outside and wait for them and greet them when they came out with a knife or shotgun to the face.
See, I'd do it right there. I wouldn't wait till they come out. I'd do it right in front of everybody.
Well, he waited till they came out to the car. He's still outside. I mean, everybody could see him. Another time, McElroy was teasing a farmer about his young daughter, asking how she was doing and how old she was, things like that.
That's creepy.
It really angered the farmer, so he threatened him to stay away from her. Angry and seeking vengeance, he later went to set the man's house on fire.
Oh, good.
But changed his mind upon arriving there. It was just about a year after this that the farmer's daughter, the one that McElroy was teasing the farmer about, would get pregnant and have a son who belonged to McElroy. Not long after McElroy and his wife, Olita, returned from Colorado back to Missouri, he began running around with Sharon, a 15-year-old girl.
Oh, good. You always make friends with younger girls when you're older.
One night, she and Ken were fighting in his pickup when Ken pulled out a shotgun and told her if she didn't shut up, he was going to blow her head off.
Oh.
Now, whether by accident
Sweet
or maybe on purpose, the gun discharged and tore open the underside of Sharon's chin, leaving permanent scars at age 15. The police were called and charges were filed.
That's horrible.
McElroy explained to Olita that he would have to divorce her and marry Sharon in order to avoid prosecution for assault with a deadly weapon. Because, you know, your wife, I guess.
Can't go to court against you.
I guess so.
But they can do it before they get married, right? No, I guess not.
Olita agreed to the divorce, and in 1958, Sharon became the second Mrs. Ken McElroy.
Oh, congratulations, Sharon. You just screwed your life up.
In July 1959, Sharon bore Ken a son that they named Jerome. The family moved to the farm outside of Skidmore in the two-bedroom house that Tony, Mabel, and Tim, that's Ken's little brother, still lived in. So they moved in with his parents. Now, Ken was gone a lot. And, well, Sharon, you know, being young, kind of wanted to have fun. So she wasn't really the best mom if she was there at all.
She's 15.
Exactly. Well, one day, Tim wasn't quite looking and almost ran over the baby and killed him.
Oh, lovely.
So Helen, who is Sharon's mom, decided to take the baby back with her to her house, which was in California.
Oh, wow.
Shortly after this, Ken and Sharon left the farm and moved to a tiny house. Sharon both seemed to love him and fear him. She would try to get away, but soon she'd be right back with him. Ken McElroy, knowing that she wasn't quite happy and might escape, decided to lock her and their brand new daughter inside the house for over 2 days. Locked in the house. Sharon escaped out of a window and showed up at the police station.
Good. At least she went to the police station.
Social services sent over an employee to interview her and placed both Sharon and her new baby daughter into a foster home.
You know, it's pretty bad when your wife gets taken away from you from the social services and put in a foster home.
True.
I mean, come on. There's a path you went down that was wrong.
Sharon soon confided in her foster mom, Linda. Sharon told her how Ken had brought home a 14-year-old girl named Sally, and Sally would live with them. McElroy frequently had sex with both of them and also beat both of them. Sharon said she couldn't take it anymore, and that's why she left. The prosecutor stepped in and filed charges against McElroy. Finding out where Sharon was staying, McElroy showed up and demanded to talk to Sharon. That was at the foster parents' home. The judge granted the meeting between Ken and Sharon and said that it was okay that he was her husband and he could talk to her. Well, good old Ken, you know, he started whispering sweet nothings, and before you know it, Sharon dropped all charges. He took her home and then beat her up terribly. Ken, Sharon, and Sally would continue to live together where Ken would violently beat them and often have violent sex with both of them, sometimes at the same time.
Just 13 and 15.
14 and 15.
14 and 15.
Well, she's had a couple babies. Maybe she's 16 now. Sally began having Ken's children. Now, Sally's the little 14-year-old, right? Started having his children. She had Ken Jr. in 1961, Lisa in 1963, and Jeffrey in 1964.
Wow, so he stayed with her the longest, it seems.
At the same time, Sharon continued having Ken's children. After Tammy Sue.
He's got some swimmers.
That was the baby daughter.
I'm telling you.
Right? She had Teresa Lynn in 1963, Tina Renee in 1964, and Debbie Ann in 1965. Let's take a moment to look at all this. So Ken is living there with his wife, not Olita. She's gone now. That was the first one. His wife, Sharon, and the little girl, Sally. And Sally has given him three kids, Sharon has given him 4, but only has custody right now. 3. So they're all 3 adults and 6 children living
in
this
house. And Alita is gone. He does have a child with Alita.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So he's got 7 kids right now.
Well, but he also got that one farmer girl pregnant too. The farmer he teased. Remember, he's teasing the farmer about the little girl. How's your daughter? How old
right.
is she?
But and I thought then, that would, no, that's no. right. That's
and then
right.
a year later, he went and got her pregnant.
Right. Ken has planted his seed in way too
Everybody.
Many
yep.
women. And the town only has 400 people?
Yeah, at this time. But now it's like,
only well, it's, yeah. well,
it's
but
he's, so half the town is his.
His,
put
right.
it that way. Okay. So with Sally and Sharon having babies, in fact, there was one time that both Sharon and Sally were in the Fairfax Hospital having Ken's babies. Mm. At the same time.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Why they were doing this.
A family that births together.
Stays together in a house with everybody. And not all married, which is fine. So during this time, Ken's thieving gets stepped up. He starts getting a little bit more sophisticated.
Well, he has to. He's got to get all these babies fed.
Take care of these kids. No kidding. So McElroy, like we already know this, developed a network of girlfriends who lived on farms in the area.
Oh, say it ain't so.
It's true.
There's no way.
These women would take the stolen animals that he would go steal and sell them at various markets and auctions using their own names. So that would keep him right. out of it.
He was kind of their animal pimp?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
I guess.
Ken would stop by
he
for a few days
castrated.
Later to settle up with the ladies. He would have sex with the women and then give them a little something for their effort. You know, a little money for getting rid of the animals that he stole that wasn't
something,
his and stole
something.
And got money.
Yep. I was thinking a little something, something else.
Nope.
From the sweet crotch of
you look up
Ken
a picture of him.
Oh, no, I know.
Okay.
I know what he looks like. He's a loser.
Okay. So his partner in crime was a young man named Larry, who he had befriended when Larry was just a young teen.
Of course he was a young teen.
Larry was a heavy drinker, and he and Ken drank constantly when they were out and about. Ken wouldn't let him drink when they went to rustling the livestock, because that, says Ken, is a serious business.
You know, some people might not know that rustling actually means stealing. They might not know rustling.
Rustling.
Yeah.
Sorry. To show you how serious this business was to Ken.
It's serious business.
It is serious business. Like I said, Ken would not allow Larry to drink on the job. So this one time, Ken had came to Larry in a truck and they were going to go, you know, steal some cattle. The one thing that Ken had said is, listen, Larry, if by chance, you know, somebody hears this or we get caught or anything like that, you know, anybody sees us, whatever, this is what you're going to do. You're going to hit the ground, okay? And I'm going to take out my gun and I will shoot them. So you need to be out of the way.
Oh, good.
So he was very, okay, you got it. He had a plan to this. He's getting very brazen. At this point, Sally had had 3 children. McElroy was finally done with her. Her father had died, which meant Ken really didn't have a hold on her. He would use her father as means to, you know, you need to stay with me or I'll take out your
right.
father, that kind of stuff.
Because he's an asshole.
Exactly.
A-S-S-H-O-L-E.
But, you know, you think Ken would just give up somebody? No, because guess what? He had found himself a nice little thing that he decided he had liked. Well, dumping Sally. Sally had no friends or close family nearby, so she moved in with her 3 kids in a tiny little apartment in Maryville. She tried to keep a job and she tried to keep good care of them. But, you know, that was a little difficult given what her lack of education and 3 young kids, and she's pretty young herself. So one night, a girlfriend had talked Sally into going to a party in St. Joe and promised her, you know, I have a babysitter for you. Everything's going to be good. The babysitter, a high school girl, comes over and ended up partying and drinking with some friends while she was supposed to be babysitting.
Oh, good.
The neighbors saw this and they called police. The police came to the house, and after finding no responsible adult there, rather no responsible adult because they're all kids drinking and partying.
I don't think any responsible adult lives there anyway.
Well, you know, Sally is, well, you're true. So the police took the children from
Good.
Sally. The county filed dependency and neglect charges, and the kids were placed in foster care. So without any money and no friends or family, Sally didn't even fight. She just gave up and disappeared.
That was her way out. She was in a crappy situation.
Correct.
Yeah. I don't even know if I blame her.
Could you imagine?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. During this time, Ken's animal stealing was doing great, and he was having such success with the stealing of other people's animals and property.
Livelihood.
He did run into a little bit of trouble. Some assault charges were filed against him in Buchanan County. But guess what? They didn't stick. One was filed by a woman and later dismissed on her request. and a farmer had filed charges after catching McElroy stealing two of his horses, but withdrew them after McElroy smashed him across the face with a rifle.
Yeah, I wonder what he did to that woman.
Tends to make you drop it.
Mm-hmm.
His stalking is on point. Just that's what he did.
Right.
I mean, he would just...
Intimidation.
Yes. In 1961, when Ken was 26, he met, dun-da-da-da, Alice Wood. Here's another one. 15 years old with brown hair.
He has a type.
Pretty blue eyes. Alice worked as a clerk at Herman's Drugstore in St. Joe. Alice found him charming and dashing with a flair for doing things his own way.
It's because she's 15.
Thank you. She was impressed. At 15, everything. Come on now.
Oh, my God. Look at you.
Oh, my God.
Twirl the hair.
Exactly. So, you know, Sally's now gone. You know, he got rid of that. In 1964, Ken left Sharon and the four girls at the farm in Skidmore, and he moved in with Alice up in St. Joe. Now, Alice loved him. In fact, she idolized him. She's 15, remember?
No.
Ken was almost never around, and when he left, he never said where he was going or when he would be back. He could be gone for 2 days or 2 weeks, and when he did return, he never gave any explanations. Although he was free to come and go, Alice
wasn't. Of course not.
She was to always stay put. She had to be there for him whenever he came home.
Because you know why? He's got to be in control.
Control. Yeah.
Loser.
She always had to be there, keep his house, run his errands, satisfy his needs, and make no demands on him.
Ugh.
Ken, as we all know, at this time, has a slew of girlfriends. And even though Alice didn't like it, she knew all about it, and she also knew it was part of the deal. How can you love anybody that much, let's be honest? Or seriously, you're
for more than like a couple months. I mean, you can
months, weeks. Like your boyfriend that you love is leaving to go bang other people. I don't think so.
But she's 15, and she thinks the world
he
of him.
But I love him, Mom. You don't understand.
It's just because kids.
I know they're cute. Okay. It is now the late 1960s, and Ken meets a guy named Fred. Fred and Ken would become fast friends and up their stealing game. On February 7th, 1969, the nearby Farmers Co-op warehouse, located in Leona, which is a tiny town just a few miles west of Troy, was broken into. Stolen were several cases of very expensive fertilizer. 2 nights later, the warehouse was hit again, and thieves took even more of the fertilizer.
They making bombs?
You'd think. I'm just selling it. Crazy.
You'd think Ken wouldn't need it because he's so full of shit anyway.
Cops speculated that Ken McElroy was behind the break-ins, and he figured that if that big dummy had come twice, he'd probably try it a third time. So the co-op, and I particularly, this kind of made me chuckle, and I bet you will too, hired an elderly night watchman. One little elderly guy.
Did they make him keep the bullet in his pocket like Barney Fife?
Yeah, to babysit the warehouse. He had a 20-gauge shotgun and was told to protect the goods. 5 nights later, the watchman was standing guard when, I'll be gosh darn, he hears somebody breaking into the warehouse. He yelled at the thieves to stop, and they turned and ran. He fired the shotgun at the retreating figures, then called the sheriff's department. This is pretty funny. When the deputy sheriff named Jerry Dubach received the call in Troy, he jumped in his car and headed west towards Leona. On the edge of town, he met a yellow Cadillac heading east toward Missouri at 65 miles per hour. He knew. He flipped around and chased the caddy, but couldn't close in on it without risking losing control of his own vehicle. He followed the car as it crossed over the bridge of the Missouri River into St. Joe and turned off at 22nd Street. But by the time he had reached 22nd Street, it was long gone. Jim McCubbin was a special agent for the Kansas Bureau of Investigation and was assigned to the investigation. He knew Ken McElroy, and he was very anxious to nail him. He had long heard the stories of him and his escapades. McCubbin had been unable to develop any solid proof of McElroy until he learned that night of the third burglary. You see, a man had come to the nearby hospital, and he had some shotgun pellets, and he needed them removed.
Okay.
The shotgun pellets were removed from his rear end as he was escaping what turned out to be the warehouse robbery. The man's name was none other than Ken McElroy. The special agent took McElroy in for questioning. Of course, McElroy denies everything. Nevertheless, on October 27, 1971, prosecutors in Doniphan County filed an indictment charging McElroy and another man with 5 counts of burglary and theft. The judge and Troy issued warrants for their arrest, which were sent to the sheriff's department in Andrew County for the execution of the warrants, along with a request for extradition. As you know, Troy is a lot closer to us than he is up there. But guess what? The warrants were never executed, and the case was never prosecuted.
Of course it wasn't.
This guy has, like, it's just unbelievable. Like, all of it never happens.
Right.
Feeling like he was invincible, McElroy went on a spree of violence and stealing that would result in 17 separate felony charges being brought against him.
Ugh.
He would demonstrate his ability to defeat the criminal system at this point, and it is here he would develop a mantra that would guide his life. He had 2 simple rules, one following the other. If you delay a case long enough, a witness may disappear or someone would forget what they saw. 2, if there is no witness, there is no case. He would use that over and over again.
All right.
By any means necessary, if you know what I'm saying.
Okay, let's take a minute here. This will be our commercial break.
At this point, rather than getting better as Alice had longed for, her life with Ken deteriorated after they moved to the farm outside of Skidmore in 1969.
Oh, really?
Shocking. Never saw it coming. Ken was never home, and when he was there, he was beating her. He began to take up with other men's wives and sometimes their young daughters. Mabel, now that's Ken's mom, and Alice were really close, and Mabel could see what was going on. Several times, Mabel would talk to Ken, hoping to persuade him to stop abusing and beating Alice, but the talks did no good. Ken's only reaction was that he'd get furious with Alice for telling his mother, come home and beat her. And sadly, she had bruises on her face. So
right.
Mabel knew. I mean, she was beat up all the time. Finally, Alice had had enough. She grabbed Juarez, who was by this time 3 years old, and took off for St. Joe.
Juarez?
Yep.
They named him Juarez?
Yep.
Well, you know what? I think Mabel probably had her share of black eyes.
Yeah, I'm sure she did.
So she probably didn't say anything. Ladies, if you're getting beaten up at home or anything like that, please go. You're better. You don't need anything like that in your life. You matter. Get out.
Doesn't end there. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
On April 10th, 1972, Ken called Alice and told her he was coming for both of them, and Juarez would be coming home with him, even if she didn't. Alice took Juarez and went to her mother and stepfather's house. She got a .32 caliber pistol from the bedroom, determined to protect herself and her son. Alice sat down at the kitchen table and began trying to load the pistol when the gun accidentally discharged and a bullet tore through her hip. She was taken to Methodist Hospital and was admitted to intensive care. Alice stayed in the hospital for a week, but the bullet was never removed. McElroy called the house that same night looking for Alice and Juarez, stating he was coming for them, or at least Juarez. He was told she was in the hospital, and he said, fine, I'm still coming over, and I'm taking the boy. Alice's stepdad said, no. Nope, nada, not gonna happen. A short time later, her stepfather looked out the living room window to see McElroy approaching the house with a rifle in his hand. Her stepfather went into another room, got a shotgun, but when he came back, McElroy had disappeared. As he was sitting in the living room, a rifle shot tore into his left thigh. This was about to make things worse. McElroy began calling her stepfather constantly, threatening to shoot him on the way to work, kill his wife at home, or shoot his child on the school playground. Finally, on January 10th, 1973, 10 months after the shooting, McElroy came out of the shadows to deal directly with the stepfather. His name is Otha. Otha?
God, I love those old Missouri names.
I was trying to avoid saying these names, but I'm going to have to say it. So Otha, which is her stepfather's name, was drinking at Garland's Tavern in St. Joe. McElroy walked in and pulled a corn knife on Otha. Ugh. I'm going to cut your guts unless you swear not to testify because of the charges, right? Because
cut your guts.
Otha pulled the chair between them and insisted he's not going to back down. McElroy left, but returned 10 minutes later carrying an automatic 12-gauge shotgun. He locked the doors behind him and yelled at the owners to close the place down. Nobody's leaving here. He walked over to Otha and stuck the barrel of the shotgun in his face. I'm going to kill you, McElroy said, unless you swear not to testify. He raised the gun in the air, then dropped the barrel in Otha's face, again pulling the hammer back and resting his finger on the trigger. I'm going to start at your feet and shoot all the way up until there's nothing left of you, McElroy said. No one in the place moved, and the room fell silent. Believing that McElroy was about to pull the trigger, Otha prepared to die. McElroy repeated the threat several times, then pointed the gun at the floor and fired. McElroy backed out the front door, gun pointed in the air, cursing the whole way out. Sergeant Jake Rostock, a 37-year-old stocky ex-Marine and veteran of the St. Joe Police Department, responded to the disturbance call. By the time he reached the bar, everything was over, and strangely enough, none of them, except Otha, had seen or heard anything. So every single person in there said they didn't.
Right. Of course
they
not.
They didn't see it.
They're scared to death.
McElroy was arrested and released on $1,500 bond. $1,500 for threatening somebody's life. On March 2nd, for some unexplained reason, the state dismissed the felony charge and refiled it as a misdemeanor, which was attempting to bribe a witness not to testify.
Did he have somebody in the government?
No, I think they were just all scared of him, small town. So attempting to bribe a witness not to testify, I guess the attempt to bribe was the gun in his face and the shooting at him.
Who knows what they told the police?
Right. Here's where we meet a good character. And by good, I mean terrible, meaning a great character in a movie. But
right.
He's going to start appearing now. In February, Richard Gene McFadden, a Kansas City trial lawyer, took over the defense of both cases. This would be the beginning of a long, mutually beneficial relationship. McElroy constantly needed a lawyer, always paid cash, and never complained about the fees. And McFadden always, or almost always, got the charges
dropped.
The case was soon tried before a magistrate on April 27th, 1973. Otha testified that McElroy had threatened to kill him if he testified in the assault case. The bartender who was originally going to testify that McElroy had threatened to kill Otha and had been there and witnessed it suddenly changed his mind and swore he hadn't seen anything, didn't know what happened, just couldn't remember.
Huh, I wonder who got to him.
In the testimony, McElroy admitted he had a shotgun with him in the bar, but said he was showing it to somebody in hopes of selling it to them. McElroy forgot the gun was loaded and it accidentally went off.
That's bad gun ownership right there.
It really is. Appearing as a character witness in favor of Ken McElroy, Alice Wood. Alice Wood told the court that Ken was a fine person and an outstanding citizen.
Oh, he is outstanding.
Nevertheless, the magistrate found McElroy guilty of the charge and sentenced him to 6 months in prison. This would be McElroy's first conviction in all of this. But guess what?
What?
It didn't stick.
No way. Shut up.
Right? Otha never knew what happened to the bribery case, but the underlying assault charge was dismissed when he finally told the prosecutor that if after 2 years it wasn't going to come to court, he wasn't going to try the case, then forget it. Let's just drop it. I need to get back on with my life. I'm tired of the harassment. Otha never again uttered a single word about any of that.
Unreal.
It's just like everybody just lets him go.
Well, of course, they're scared to death of him. Who knows what they knew? Who knows what he did?
It is about this time that McElroy sets his sights on Trina McLeod. Trina was a pretty girl with blue eyes and long blonde hair. Trina had had a rough upbringing as her dad walked out one night, never came home, and her mom decided she didn't want to be a mom and left Trina with her grandparents.
Poor kid.
Think about the age here. Think about your daughter.
No,
daughter.
I know.
No, but just what I'm about to tell you. In the spring of her eighth grade year,
Tarina changed. She started skipping school, and the grades were now unimportant to her. There was a man in a pickup truck who would often be seen waiting for her outside. And this man was none other than Ken McElroy.
She's the right age.
McElroy began picking Tarina up and taking her to and from school. He would often take her to local stores and buy her little trinkets and gifts, which, you know, an eighth grader would totally love. Look at this, isn't it? Look at my heart necklace. It's so pretty. Soon, the visits turned to the Tic-Toe Motel.
The Tic-Toe?
Tic-Toe Motel, where McElroy would have relations, molest, let's be honest.
Pretty much, yeah.
Molest Tarina. In the fall of her freshman year of high school, Tarina became pregnant and dropped out of school. After Tarina dropped out of school in 1972, her life essentially was narrowed down to Ken McElroy.
Right.
Although both Tarina and Alice later denied that the two of them lived at the farmhouse together, town folks swore that they saw them there. Tarina would spend most, if not all, of her time there until she had a baby. The baby. Tarina would later tell how Ken used to make love to both of them in the same night, going from one room to another. It bothered Tarina, but what could she do? Tarina learned that the way to get along with Ken was to do as she was told without asking questions.
That's gross.
In the beginning, it was simple obedience. You know, kind of like a dog minds his master. But in later years, Tarina grew to believe in him and what he stood for. So as we get that, this kind of becomes the controversial part. Like, she really kind of had just as much bullying as he did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, she totally was right there with him. Immediately after Trina's baby was born, she begged Alice to escape with her and take their kids with them. Alice complied, but soon they both would regret it. Ken drove around town until he could find them. He forced them back home with a gun in his hand. Alice was beaten badly, and Ken threatened to kill her, but instead he brought the butt of the rifle down onto her face, breaking her nose and shattering her cheekbone.
Ugh, that hurts too, because when I tried to jump over the one gas pump, and I fell on the concrete lift step where the gas thing is. I didn't crack it, but man, that hurt.
And you know what's funny? I bet people think, oh, that's cute. Jen probably did that when she was 16. No, it was like last year.
Yeah. I kind of thought I was still a spring chicken. Nope. I'm not. There's no spring in this step anymore. But yeah, that hurt. So I can only imagine how, if it actually shatters, how bad it hurts. Yeah.
For Tarina's punishment, Tarina would be raped while the baby, who was born just 16 days earlier, calculate that, 16 days post-birth, cried on the couch watching Ken rape his mom. Ken held a rifle in his hand as he committed the act of rape. This would not be the only thing Ken would do to illustrate who was boss. Ken McElroy went to Tarina's mother and stepfather's house and burnt it to the ground. Why? Her stepdad, Ronnie was the one that lent them a car and helped them with their failed, well, now failed, escape attempt. All right, Jen, so we're going to stop the episode right here. Okay, good stopping point. And kind of leaves us with a couple questions for the next time.
Sure.
All right.
All right.
So, Jen, you want to tell the good people where they can find us?
You can find us on Twitter at our True Crime Pod. You can find us on our blog that we hardly ever keep up, but we're there.
We've been on break for 2 weeks, so for the last 2 weeks it has not been updated.
No, for the last 3 weeks.
No, 2 weeks.
Your
two,
last
week, two.
Okay, because the last episode isn't on there.
I know.
Yeah, that's ourtruecrimepodcast.com. Sometimes you have to put a www at first. You do. Sometimes you don't. I don't know. I'm not a techie. You can email us at ourtruecrimepodcast@gmail.com. If you need anything else, just contact us.
Yeah. You know where to find us.
We're here.
Come on now.
We have a Facebook page. We have a discussion page. It's not really a discussion. It's more of a meme page. And I think that's about it.
Okay. So remember, Jen, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. you go ahead and read your script.
I'm going to read it.
Just and then I'm going to act surprised.
With no emotion, I'm going to read
I'm going to act
surprised.
Mm-hmm.
To look at it, this small town. No, express.
Not a small town.
It is. Not away. What did I say? Not away?
Not away.
Okay, look it up. Not away. Not away. Where are you? Not away. Hey, where are you going? Not away.
Let's see.
How about getaway? No, not away. Do do run. Run, run. Do do run, run.
Let's see. This is a county in the west of Ireland that a lot of people...
That's Ireland.
That's Ireland.
That's a different, that's a different
that's
part
Ireland.
Of the... Different, I'd say not away. What did I say? Not away or
you
not?
You said not away.
Okay.
But I remember...
Not away?
It's not away. Hold on.
Well, it's got a D. Nod away.
Nod away. Right. Yep. So it's not node away.
I didn't say node away.
Yes, you did.
Okay. Look it up.
Yeah, you did. It's not away. Because.
Node away.
With.
Node away? Not away. Nod, like nod, head nod.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not away.
Yeah.
No, I mean, did, are you on how do you
how
say?
To pronounce.
There you go.
Not away.
Not away. She drunk.
Not away. Not away is located in the state of Missouri.
She drunk.
How to pronounce not away. Not away. Not away.
Not away. Can I say it like that every time? Because that would be good.
Located in the state of Missouri and has a population of 23,419
of people. Of
people? How to pronounce
not of people.
Not away.
Not away.
I've never heard her like that. All right, not away. You ready? See, I'm going to say McLemore. I'm going to kill you now. McElroy. Nope.
It's McElroy. That's what you've been saying.
It is McElroy, but now I'm getting all confused saying McLemore.
Do that anyway because you cut up a sentence that made it sound funny.
That the farmer's daughter, the one that, you know, McElroy.
That was you.
I know, but it's in my head now. You put it in my head.
You said McElroy.
I know.
That's nothing for me.
I can't get his
name
right.
It's okay, Camille. Pass the buck. That's fine.
I'm going to punch you. See, you're not listening to the story.
Yes, I am.
But I mean, that's taking away from it, you know? McElroy.
It is Voy, not Roy.
God damn it. McElroy. What am I saying?
McElroy.
Okay, I've been saying McElroy, though, right?
I think so.
Yes, because that's how I have it written.
McElroy.
McElroy.
And you're sure on that's how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Because it looks like McElroy.
Showed up and demanded to talk to Sharon. Now, what do you think?
Do that
happen?
A little bit quicker because it sounds like you were... Finding out where
I'm trying
Sharon...
to read with emotion, like that chick said.
Well, just try to read.
It's fine. Shut up, Jennifer.
You're reading like there's a period after every.
There is kind of because my eyes are going forward after that to see what's coming up. Oh, you haven't drank that yet? Mm-hmm. I thought that was old. You can pour me a little bit in here. I'll be happy as a clam since mine had a spit. I just want. Sorry, Nico. Hold on, Nico. Poor Nico. Oh my God. Thanks.
We missed you, Nico.
Isn't this story crazy?
He's a mess.
We haven't even met the main one yet, the one that gets in all the trouble with them. She's not even there yet. 26, and he's got all these children running around. And how many women?
He thinks he's a stud.
Ugh.
He ain't.
Okay.
Herbicide or is it herbicide?
It's herbicide, isn't it?
Isn't the H silent?
I don't think so. No, on herb aside, on herbs. Herbicide? I don't know. Is herbicide fertilizer? Because I can change it. I can just change the whole name.
I would say fertilizer.
It is fertilizer, right?
Because it's an herb. Thyme, parsley, sage,
rosemary, and thyme
are herbs. But I go to church with a guy named Herb.
And so I always thought it was herbicide. Who knows? I'm the one that says private. With the D.
Well, you say a lot of other stuff, but I don't correct you because I don't want you to freak out.
I do not say incorrect things. You do. Okay.
When Undersheriff Jerry Dubach received the call.
A deputy sheriff is what it is.
That's what I said. I said I figured it was the person next in charge.
Right, but that's what the title would be, deputy sheriff.
I wonder how come these takes forever for us to do this. But it says undersheriff, and I use that word because I like it, because I've never heard of it.
All right.
McCubbin had been unable to develop.
McCubbin?
That's why I said you're going to laugh at this name.
Okay, I thought you at first McCubbin. You said McCubbin, but
Cubbin,
it's Cubbin.
Two B's.
Gotcha.
See, and I thought you were going to say McChubbin.
No.
And I was going to laugh.
I thought it was McCubbin.
You didn't laugh. So I saw that name, and I went ahead and said, Jen's going to think this name's funny, and then she's going to say McChubbin, and then we're going to laugh, and then we're going to talk about chubbies and things like that.
No, I thought you said Cubbin.
Then you didn't catch it the first time, then catch it the second time. That was all for you, Nico.
No, I thought it was Cubbin.
I know you said it five times. Ready?
I thought it was Coven. That makes it six, and that's normal. That's six.
McChubbin. Nothing? Okay. McChubbin had been unable to.
It's Cubbin, right? Not Chubbin? Now you're saying McChubbin.
McCubbin. Cubbin.
Right. Now, but you said McChubbin.
No, I don't think I did, but okay, whatever. I don't care.
I'll play it for you.
No, I don't want to. I don't care. I'll play it later. County. Sorry, Nico. I really give zero Fs these days, buddy, or else normally I wouldn't burp so loud in there. But it's soda, so, you know, whatever.
This will be our commercial break. If you can let us know the time of this when it's done editing, that would be awesome. I got a new pair of shoes.
That is the theme to Jeopardy, Nico. I don't know if they have Jeopardy over there.
I'm sure they have Jeopardy.
Or if they have the same host. I don't know. Anyway, here we go.
Mm-hmm.